Gemma, I know we're both excited to talk about Harrison Ford's sweaty and shirtless body. But first, this episode is brought to you by The Lesson, presented by Bleecker Street. Richard E. Grant, Julie Delpy, and Daryl McCormick star in a taut noir thriller about Liam, an ambitious young writer hired to tutor the son of his literary idol, J.M. Sinclair, played by Grant, and his inscrutable wife, Helene, played by Julie Delpy. Hoping to use the position to build a relationship with his hero, Liam is instead ensnared in a web of family secrets, resentment, and retribution.
Sinclair, his wife, and their son are all guarding a dark past that threatens Liam's future as well as their own. The Hollywood Reporter calls The Lesson an exquisite, sun-drenched noir, and Awards Daily says that Richard E. Grant has never been better and that Julie Delpy is the perfect femme fatale. Letterboxd members are talking about this movie. Riley says that Richard E. Grant is so reserved, then desperate before finally becoming a ball of rage. So strange, but very enjoyable. And Myerson says, and this is going to be my favorite review, like Tar, but crazier.
Cameron also left a review, a tense and compelling noir that is well acted, has brilliant cinematography, great directing and writing. So go see The Lesson in theaters July 7th. And now on with the show.
Okay, so we're not all gonna do it. Okay.
just me and Mia. Yes. Are we the only John Williams fans here? I mean, fine.
There's so many John Williams fans listening right now. Hello, Indiana Jones fans, and welcome to the Letterboxd Show, our podcast about movies and the people who love watching them. I'm Slim, joined today by my co-host Gemma, and in this very special episode, Spectacular, we're focusing on the Indiana Jones franchise. That's right, all five of them. No, we're not skipping Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, okay? It exists. You just need to deal with it.
Damn. Okay. And look, at the end, we'll get into a spoiler-free chat about the new Dial of Destiny, a new Indiana Jones film in my lifetime. I'm just so wildly excited, but we will not be alone. We're getting the band back together for this crusade. Mitchell and Mia from Weekend Watchlist, still on extended hiatus, but they are here. We're dusting off our highest hook debate skills to settle once and for all which indie movie is the best indie movie. Mia, Mitchell, welcome to this very special roundtable episode. The judge's decision is in. Temple of Doom is the winner, but it'll be a short show, so you may still all make your cases.
Wrong. We have not judged anything yet. Mitchell, this is your first appearance on the show in a few weeks, so I'll start with you. Were you on the high school debate team?
No, I was not on the debate team. I'm not a great public speaker, but I will say I was Math League number one champion in the state of Delaware, the entire state, 2 years in a row. So I hope that my math equations will come in handy on this episode to debate about Indiana Jones movies.
I mean, on that basis, Dial of Destiny is surely the winner already. It is so math.
Spoiler free. Don't tell me how much math is in that movie.
We're 30 seconds into the discussion. Jeff is already going hard on the plot points of Dial of Destiny. Mia, were you on the debate team in high school?
No, I was president of the drama club and I did a bad job. Because I quit to work at the library, which is kind of Indiana Jonesy a little bit.
Yeah, very, very Indiana Jonesy.
He likes libraries and museums and schools. So.
Did you write love you on your eyelids for your head librarian teacher?
Every single day. That was my pre-class routine.
Can't imagine why you were fired from any clubs.
You know that I was the captain of my debate team and that we won the Auckland Debating Association Championships at the age of 13 over all the 18-year-olds.
Wow. This is rigged. This feels rigged.
It does. But Slim, how did you go in the public speaking camp at high school?
I don't think I was in any clubs, really. I was, you know, that geeky comic book reader in high school. So as you can imagine, you know, high school went very well for me, obviously. But enough about my high school past. We have to get into our first movie. So the format of this episode, we're going to go through them all. And I think one of the hosts will make their pitch for why that Indiana Jones film may be the best one. And we're starting with my movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It's your movie? You directed this?
2 years wow. before I was even born, I was behind the camera for Raiders of the Lost Ark. 4.2 average when Dr. Indiana Jones, I just have to say, I read the synopsis for these movies. I don't know what it is about them, but they just don't feel right. So we need, I think we'll probably get some Gemma flavor later in the show for a synopsis. So I'm excited to get to that.
Look, I've rewritten mine and I've rewritten Dial of Destiny, but I read this one and I was like, it's fine. It is what it is.
I need something with zest. This doesn't quite give me the zest.
It's true. Why don't you come in hot with the tagline then?
It should be Dr. Indiana Jones fights Nazis to the death until they explode in a fiery hot magma end. That should be, that's all you really need. I didn't realize that this is the only Indiana Jones movie in the 1 million watched club on Letterboxd. Did you know that? This is the most popular one.
Did not know that, but it makes sense.
People watch this and then they're like, I don't need to see any of the other ones. I'm over like, this no. This isn't great.
Yeah, why bother? So in many ways, I feel like that might make the case for me since this is the one that I'm on the debate team pitching for Raiders of the Lost Ark. Now, I'll go to the tagline. This is part of my pitch. The tagline for this movie, one of the best ever. Indiana Jones, the new hero from the creators of Jaws and Star Wars. That's hard to top, in my opinion.
At that time in cinema, that's all you needed to know to run to the movies, to run straight to the movies, buy 10 tickets, and watch every single session on day one.
Yeah. So I do love Raiders of the Lost Ark. I love seeing Nazis explode and die. This is the one that kicked things off. It has everything. It has the Bible. It's got intrigue, mystery, stunt show, theatrics. So I feel like I don't really even need to make a hard sell for me personally on this movie, but Mitchell, we'll hear from Mitchell's pick later in the show. Mitchell, where do you stand on Raiders of the Lost Ark, the first one?
I'm just very impressed by you setting up this debate episode. Then your debate, your pick is, I don't think I really even need to do anything. I think I won, right? Like, let's...
Should we cut to the outro? Can we hit the music? Let's just end this right away. Not even go the other one.
I think Raiders is, we'll hear about what my favorite is. I think people can expect what mine's going to be. But I mean, Raiders is great. It's probably my second favorite. I think that the thing that always stands out for me the most about Raiders of the Lost Ark is how impressive the like scene by scene, the action sequences are in it. How it like, I think it is the one out of all of the Indiana Jones movies that most exemplifies how Spielberg is like a master at camera placement, at being able to like trek us through like a set piece so that we understand like geographically where everything and everyone is at all times. And like, it really just invites us to experience these big set pieces with the characters in a way that I feel like we don't see a lot in like modern blockbusters where it's kind of like all a meaningless blur. And so I always get this like exhilaration when I'm watching Raiders of the Lost Ark again, because it's like, oh, this is what an action sequence can be when like a director knows what he's doing and really takes us through it.
Yeah.
Okay, film school. That was beautiful. Whereas I'm just like, it's the plane fight for me. It's that slow moving plane turning in a circle and you just know someone's going to go through the propeller and it's going to be disgusting and Spielberg's going to go there and it's fine because they're Nazis. I think there's so much literature out there about the setup. So there's always an opening caper, right? And then there's the indie, well, Dr. Jones is back at university as this humble professor with his sexy glasses on, and then somebody from the government comes in for a chat about a thing that's gone missing that only he can help them find. And there's a lot of talk about how that scene in Raiders is in among all of the action sequences, which you know, Mitchell, you're so right, the camera placement is just beyond masterful. But there's a scene in Raiders where they just talk for ages. But there's something about who's doing the talking, who knows what when, and how all of that sets up the entire plot that keeps it so kind of narratively thrilling. So it's like, even when they're sitting still, they're moving fast. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mia, what do you think about the first one?
I think it's really neat that Harrison Ford got dysentery on the set. That's what I think. Y'all know about this?
tell us more. Tell us, give us the dysentery dirt that you have on Harrison Ford.
I don't like dysentery. Hashtag dysentery dirt.
Hashtag dysentery dirt. So, you know, you guys all know the big scene where there's that swordsman and then Indiana Jones just takes out his gun and shoots him. Classic scene. So they were supposed to do this big, intricate sword fight, but Harrison Ford could not stop almost shitting himself on the set because he contracted dysentery. So he asked
Spielberg. We've all been there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we've all done this on set. So he asked Spielberg, like, why don't I just shoot the guy? And here we have beautiful cinema history. Thank you. There. Gosh. And that is why I'm joining Slim's team, is this one is the best one. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, wow.
Wait a second. No, I'm kidding.
This has been your weekly dysentery pad from Mia on the podcast.
One thing about me, I'm going to know which actors are getting dysentery on set.
It is one of the funniest moments in that film. And I love how a lot of the comedy in Indiana Jones movies come from, you know, we're on a tight schedule here. What are we going to do about this dysentery / Harrison Ford putting his back out in Temple of Doom / whatever else happens to him on every single set of, I mean, it's a cursed set, but he always brings it home. I feel like the best thing to do to follow dysentery is to lean into and remind the listeners of just how extremely hot Harrison Ford is. And there's no better place.
In case you forgot,
there's no better place to be reminded of this than Letterboxd reviews of Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, we've got Haley writing, I'm currently building a time machine so I can go back to 1981 and bang Harrison Ford. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's okay because Dial of Destiny, they do a little bit of that crazy Irishman face stuff, Haley. So it's
spoilers.
You don't even need a time machine. Stephanie, Indiana Jones could have texted me at 12:24 a.m. for a booty call, and I would have responded to him at 12:22 a.m. saying, I'm on my way. And then there's this great, this is the whole dichotomy of the Indiana Jones character, right? Will Sloan writes, in one scene, Indy is a nerdy professor who gets flustered when a student hits on him. 2 seconds later, when ex-flame Karen Allen tells him, I was just a child, he grunts, you knew what you were doing. Indy becomes a different man when he puts on that hat.
Indiana Jones would treat me so badly and I would let him.
We do have to point out too, like part of the story, Marion comes back and if like you do the math that, you know, Mitchell, I'm sure has done since Mitchell's math was, you know, sure. math lead in Delaware.
Do the math, Mitchell. How old was Marion?
15. Young.
She would have been 15 if you go do the math.
Too
now,
young.
I will say, my dog's ears just perked up. Everyone's voice got so high.
Too young.
They did retcon that. Thankfully, I mean, not many people probably read the Nerd's Guide to the Indiana Jones franchise where they retconned that and said that she was probably 17 at the time, but even not good for Indy in this movie at all.
The interesting thing is that Karen Allen is she's in both the two best Indiana Jones movies, as we all know, which is great for her. Very
That's
exciting.
Correct.
No
that
spoilers.
Is correct.
We'll get to it later.
And this could be a thread for the first three at least, but there are so many scenes in the first three that feel like if Disney made this into a stunt show, I would be in line for it. Like every one of those first three movies has like a set piece that you're like, oh my God, I could totally see this becoming a ride somewhere. And they do have the Indiana Jones stunt show, but so much of me watching these movies, they feel like stunt shows in a good way.
Has anyone else done the Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland?
Yes.
It is.
Shit. Rode it. Yes.
Oh, I
my very
rode it.
First ride.
I thirst queued. I thirst sat. I thirst rode. We came around. My stepson, who was 9 at the time, was like, "I'm going to throw up. I can't do it again." And I was like, "Well, you just sit over there and wait because I'm riding this."
Did either of you have dysentery while you were in?
Yeah, that's part of the experience. Yes.
Yeah.
I made sure.
Your first time. All right, so that is the first movie. I feel like
Well,
you have something else?
I do have something else to say. Okay. I always have something else to say, but I think We do need to talk about, you mentioned the Nazis exploding. I bought these movies to rewatch them so that I could get all of the extras. Like, you can watch them on, if you got Disney Plus, you can watch them right now, not a problem. But I bought them so I could watch the extras. And I was watching the, you know, the light and magic behind Indiana Jones behind the scenes last night, because I really love the melting Nazi in Raiders. I love it so much. Like, I can't get enough of that scene, nor can my seven-year-old. And so we were kind of obsessed with, how did they do it? And they show you how in the behind the scenes. It's brilliant. And, you know, I love it because it's stop motion. They do frame by frame. They basically build this face off the model of the actor, and then they kind of wax it up, and then they just blast heat on it and do frame by frame as it melts. But because it's frame by frame, you can't see the drips coming off, which is why it looks so freaky in the film. Anyway, and then they show you how the exploding Nazi works, and it's fun, Slim. I can highly recommend it. If you love the exploding Nazis, as you have said you did in your debate speech, you really ought to be watching this behind the scenes.
No one has ever lost a debate speech by saying they love seeing Nazis explode. It's because it's impossible to vote against that person. It's too risky to vote against that person. So, speaking of risky movies, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom has a few risky scenes. This is Gemma's movie here. So we have to hear from Gemma, I believe, for this one.
This is it. This is my first Indiana Jones. And it doesn't matter how good the other ones are. This will always have my heart. 1984, directed by Mr. Kate Capshaw. 3.6 average, which is the new Gemma line, I might add. This is Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, originally entitled Temple of Death. I mean, wow, ooh, that gives you an idea. It is the best, the darkest, the most horrific Indiana Jones movie. This is the film that created the PG-13 rating. It sees Indy survive a murder attempt by a Shanghai crime boss, escape to India with the future Mrs. Steven Spielberg and future Oscar winner Ke Huy Quan, and agree to help a village find a mystical stone and their missing children, whereupon they stumble upon a secret cult plotting a terrible plan in the catacombs of an ancient palace, and, you know, shenanigans ensue. It's Steven Spielberg's least favorite indie. Wild, right? Which is cancelled out by being my most favorite, so it's fine. It's all good. It's all good. The thing is, I did not know until I was doing my research this week, and how could I have not known this, that this was written as a prequel to Raiders. So it's set in 1935 because they wanted to avoid having to use the Nazis again. They wanted to go in a different direction. And so it's so weird to me. And I guess it makes sense of why nobody talks about Marion, and Marion never gets a mention, and it's all about Kate Capshaw. But yeah. Why do I love this movie? Because it is so freaky. Because it is so dark. Because monkey brains. Because hand going into that guy's chest cavity and pulling out a beating heart. It is so disgustingly gross, and it's seared into my memory. It left such a major impression on me, and I was nowhere near 13, mind you, for the PG-13. Have to say, yep, it's culturally dodgy, in fact downright racist, but damn, spoilers, when those kids get returned to the village, wow, I melt. And also, Willie and Indy are so horny. Willie is played by Kate Capshaw. And here's another reason I love it. This is a review from, I don't know if you've heard of her, a Letterboxd member called Mia Vicino. All caps. Thank you, Mr. Spielberg, for the singular torn-off sleeve. Perfectly symbolizes Indy's two sides. Hot professor by day, hot archaeologist also by day. Genius. Ask anyone. I can't shut up about this frickin' sleeve. Mia, the floor is yours.
Oh, good. Okay. So first off, I have to say that this is my Fortnite character I always play as, is Indiana Jones with the torn off sleeve. That is my chosen avatar for the children's game Fortnite. But yeah, so as you were saying, this is the horniest Indiana Jones in my mind. Is that something that we as a group can agree on?
By far.
Okay.
The Apple scene, I feel the Apple scene could be R-rated.
The Apple scene.
What she says in that scene.
The whole screwball romance when they're going back and forth between their rooms and the temple. Ah,
isn't that beautiful that we have a consensus on something? I think that's beautiful.
That's
it, and that's the end. You said everything. It's simply hot. It is simply hot and sexy and horny. And this was my favorite Indiana Jones when I was a kid for some reason, because of that and because of my weird coming of age feelings where I was like, I'm feeling weird things watching this movie and I don't understand why. So this is also important to me. This might have been my first indie too, Gemma.
What
were we doing? Why?
What a gateway. What a gateway Indiana Jones film.
Mitchell, was this your first?
No. my first Indiana Jones was Kingdom of the Crystal Skull in theaters with my dad. I don't know why. I don't know how I didn't, like, I wasn't introduced to them earlier. I don't know what my parents were doing, but my dad, when I was 18, was like, hey, let's go watch the new Indiana Jones. And I was like, sure, I don't need to watch the other ones. I can follow it. And I did it because it's a masterpiece of a movie and you don't need to have any research to it. But for Temple, I want to say, like, before recording this, I did write down, like, thinking about them all together, the four at least, because I haven't seen Dial of Destiny, and feeling like each one does have at least one element that I think is doing the best, like, out of any of the other. There's at least one thing in each movie where I'm like, this is the best Indiana Jones, like, for this reason. And for Temple of Doom, it is the best one for seeing shirtless, sweaty Harrison Ford. Mm-hmm. And what else do you need in cinema than that? Like him in that era, like this is around the same time as Witness. Like he's so hot in Witness.
Oh my God.
It's just, this movie, I don't like this movie, whatever. But I would watch it for that every day of the week.
I mean, okay, he's dripping.
He hits a woman in this. What's more attractive than that, right? Right, guys? Right?
He also hits Short Round. He's like hitting everyone.
God, yeah. But he was possessed. That wasn't his fault.
That's true. Mm. It wasn't his fault.
It's and when Short Round goes, the blood.
I love you, Indiana Jones. I mean, there's nothing better than that. But can I just say, as the resident, apparently, behind the scenes documentary expert of this episode, the BTS doc on this one, wow, it has the goods. It has so many goods, but it specifically has a scene of Harrison Ford working out that beats that Paul Mescal gladiator footage from this week. Uh-oh. Any day.
Really?
It is wild. Like if you've seen that Paul Mescal working out for gladiator scene and you were impressed, you got to.
What did they even have
Harrison
back
Ford.
Then? Just like free weights? That's got to be it. Free weights and running. That's
he's
it.
He's using dumbbells.
Harrison's really got into even better shape because he had to have his shirt off for much of the time. So Harrison did a lot of weight training and aerobic training, and he just got himself into peak condition.
That's it. Never mind.
He's pumping free weights, and he's dripping, and he's shirtless, and it's like, I can't
no
even.
No screenshots dropped in the letterbox Slack. I don't understand how this has happened. We're not seeing the details.
They're coming
details.
Straight after this. Other discoveries in the behind the scenes. Kate Capshaw was like, I am not getting into a pond with live snakes. So Steven Spielberg, obviously because he desperately wanted to marry her, like they'd just met, they're horny for each other. That's the other part of the horniness of this movie. One of the reasons it's so dark is because George Lucas and Steven Spielberg were both going through their divorces. And so in the writing and the making up of the story, they're just like, pouring all this freaky darkness in it. Then Kate Capshaw turns up on set and Spielberg's like, ooh. And she's like, I'm not getting in that pond with those snakes. Okay, I'll just cut that scene. That's fine. Like, imagine having the power. But then she had to promise in return to do the bug scene. You know, that like that shaft full of bugs. So
no,
gross.
No,
real
no,
bugs.
No, no.
A real bug expert grew a hotel full of bugs for that scene.
Hotel.
And she... Oh, so disgusting. And
hotel for bugs.
You see Spielberg going, we're going to need about 50,000 bugs, and then cracking up, like giggling, like this, like just a little teenage boy who's totally in his element. On the day that they shot that scene, Kate Capshaw's like, I don't want to say I was on drugs, but I was on drugs. She totally took a relaxer.
Jeez. We were talking about how like this is a prequel and because we don't hear about Marion. But like we don't hear about Short Round again. I don't understand how like there isn't even like an offhand reference later in the movies about.
I did read that they were going to have like Short Round and a couple other characters at the end of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, the best Indiana Jones movie. They were going to have them like at the wedding with him and Marion, but then they like decided not to, which maybe it would have been a little bit like too cheesy. Idiotic. I don't know, but. You could. They had to have the moment with him and Mutt with the hat. You know, we all wanted it. We all wanted to see that moment happen.
Everyone begging for that moment with Mutt Williams before the movie came out.
Ugh. It is weird, oh, though, man. That Shoryu never gets, like, his number one sidekick, like, his best bud, and then, like,
says
literally
he loves
never,
you, never, and then you never see Short Round again. I think he might be referenced in the novels, because there's a bunch of novels, and I think he might come up in those, but that's it.
Not canon.
And would just say in the epic, Harrison Ford gets dysentery and so on and so forth. In this one, he puts his back out in a scene and then has to fly to LA to have serious experimental back surgery, and he's out for 6 weeks. Yeah, crazy experimental back surgery, and he's out for 6 weeks. So, you know,
does that explain the like signature Harrison Ford gait that he has when he walks and runs? Like, nobody on this planet runs like Harrison Ford. He's got like a signature run walk. I don't know how to describe it.
I also want to say that this is the film that gives us that iconic scene where the door is closing. He has to reach and get his hat from underneath. It doesn't get enough credit for that. That
doesn't
the one and that it comes from.
I'm glad you brought it up, Mia, because Spielberg's least favorite Indiana Jones movie, Spielberg's favorite Indiana Jones scene. So I rest my case.
I also we'll get into it. I like Crystal Skull, but I also think it's fascinating that that wouldn't be in contention for his least favorite of his own. Like,
I don't understand what you're talking about.
Let me say again, I like that movie. However, yes. I feel like
we all like that movie.
The rating for Crystal Skull is way low than Temple of Doom.
In fairness to Slim, to your point, in fairness, the behind the scenes documentary in which he said it was his least favorite was filmed before Crystal Skull was made.
Okay.
So, and he said some disparaging things about Crystal Skull, and he did it as more of a favor for George than something that he was passionate about. But it's fine. He's wrong sometimes. We're all wrong sometimes.
And also just because, you know, I'm a woman and this film features in Eve's amazing Letterboxd list written by women. So Gloria Katz was pulled in to write this script with Willard Huyck. And she and Kate Capshaw both got razzed on by the industry because something about the character of Willy, like she screams a lot in the film, a lot. And as she should, snakes, bugs, elephants, like, you know, everything, hearts being pulled out of chest cavities. And there was this kind of like, people didn't like her because she was no Marion. She screamed. It was the mid-80s, shoulder pads, I don't know, power, feminism, something, something, something. And, you know, this is a throwback character. And she's, poor old Kate's like, I'm a solo mum. I've basically got half a PhD. I'm a raging feminist. You know, I'm politically active. And suddenly I'm on red carpets being vilified for being this kind of helpless character. And so I'd just like to say, you know, yeah, she's no Marion. But give the woman some credit. Only one day ago, she was in some Busby Berkeley musical in Shanghai in a sequin dress. And next minute, she's flying out of a plane in an inflatable, sliding down a hill with Indiana Jones in Short Round. And, you know, I think she coped as best she could.
I love Willy in this.
Eating their eyeball soup.
Get the haters out of here. I want them gone.
Okay, bye. See ya.
See ya, Mia. Get out of here.
Are you all in for Willy, Slim?
I love Willy.
Slim can't stop talking about Willy.
I was vilified on another podcast of mine talking about Willy because I see myself in Willy. And I think people are afraid to see themselves in Willy. Maybe they don't want to see themselves scared about being draped over by spiders and scorpions. Oh, she's a normal person just like me. Get over it, okay? She's just like me. I've had it. The Willy
and
vilification.
That is why Temple of Doom is the best Indiana Jones film.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, 1989, by Mr. Kate Capshaw. 4.1 average. That's pretty high, almost as high as Raiders. Look at that. So the synopsis is, when Dr. Henry Jones Sr. suddenly goes missing while pursuing the Holy Grail, eminent archaeologist Indiana Jones must team up with Marcus Brody, Sala, and Elsa Schneider to follow in his father's footsteps and stop the Nazis from recovering the power of eternal life. Oh, it would be bad if the Nazis got eternal life. Oh, it would be so bad. The tagline for this one is funny too. It's, The man with the hat is back, and this time, he's bringing his dad.
And his dad is like 12 years older than him, Sean Connery, in real life.
It was a different time. It was a different time.
It is true. Sean Connery is only 12 years older than Harrison Ford. And guess what? I don't care. I don't mind in the slightest. I think they did a good job of like aging him up and putting like some white in the beard and everything. I don't mind it. I think it's great casting. He's also in that little bucket hat the whole movie. It's so cute and fashion forward.
Yeah, he was well ahead of the time on that.
Way ahead of it. But the best part of this film is that 2,000 rats were bred for the production. Yes, yes. Spielberg.
Mia's always bringing up rats.
I'm bringing up the rats.
Another rat with a Z plug.
Yep. Spielberg is both giving rats life and employing them. That's so beautiful. Like, he started this whole society of rats.
Rat union.
Yeah. It's amazing. So,
we've got roaches, we've got scorpions, we've got rats.
The Rats Guild of America. Oh my God. So dumb.
The RGA.
The RGA. Like, yes, he's truly a rat ally for that. No,
rally.
They're a rally. And you know what? It's also Spielberg's personal favorite of the Indies.
Oh.
Because it's about
he probably said that before King of the Crystal Skull came out, though, I think.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. That's a good point. Okay, I'm laughing. Okay. So, I mean, I think that helps my case a little bit, mm-hmm. that this is his favorite.
That's a pretty good case. I mean, the RGA, the rat ally ship.
We got the RGA.
I love Last Crusade. This is probably the one that I've seen the most on TBS. You know, whatever daytime cable channel had the rights to this, they played it constantly. So this might have been my first Indiana Jones movie. So I have so many fond memories of, you know, like certain scenes and moments and the mystery, like them going to that library, you know, to
you know, I love libraries,
all that stuff. And also growing up as like a Catholic schoolboy, like the search for the Holy Grail is like super, like I love that idea of going into the kind of biblical stuff.
So, oh yeah. So I mean, deeply.
This one has the best puzzles also, I feel like. Yes. You know, like there's that library puzzle where he has to break through the floor. That's
X
a puzzle, breaking
the
floor.
Spot.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And then you have like, there's that rotating fireplace in the castle too, which is very, I know it's not really a puzzle, but it feels like a puzzle to me. It's very like Nancy Drew computer game, a lot of the puzzles and things. There's, you know, there's the booby traps, there's the invisible bridge, there's that grail puzzle. Like as a puzzler, this is a veritable feast.
The gamer's then, choice.
Yeah, this is the gamer's choice. Exactly, exactly. This one's for the gamers. And then also, when I rewatched this, I feel strongly that Sammy Fableman directed the opening sequence with the Boy Scouts. That is Sammy Fableman through and through. And then, right? It really reminded me of like the little Fablemans films that Sammy made. But you also have like River Phoenix in that opening scene. You have finding out why India's so afraid of snakes in that scene. Yeah, I know. And then you have Indy imprinting on an archaeologist. Like he sees this man who's dressed exactly like the way that young Indy will later dress. Like it's just so funny. He sees this man and he's like, I am going to base my entire look and personality off of this guy.
Haven't we all done that at some point in time? Whether it's a rock star or a movie star or a hot archaeologist.
Or Velma Kelly in Chicago.
There we go.
Oh, man. There's so many good parts of this. And then I think it's also really, really interesting and weird how Indy accidentally falls for a Nazi. Who he and his father both slept with. Like, I don't know. It's both funny and dramatic and really, really just like a nice father-son story. I don't know. Spielberg's good at that stuff. Who would have thunk?
And funnily enough, at the time it came out, well, not funnily enough, they knew what they were doing. The River Phoenix of it all, just the River Phoenix of it all, it is the most perfect casting, much like Shia LaBeouf and Crystal Skull is the least perfect casting. It is. Oh my God. River Phoenix was the most perfect casting. And I would say, even though Temple of Doom was my gateway film and a horrifying, terrifying gateway film, I made sure that this one was my son's gateway film. And it's a perfect indie gateway movie. It's the perfect one to watch first because you get young indie. You get all those cool shenanigans with the horses and the cars and the train. Yeah, everything is great. It's a good, I would recommend any parent make this the first film that they expose their child.
Mitchell, is this the ultimate gateway to Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade?
No, I mean, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is the ultimate gateway into Indiana Jones. It was my gateway. But I think one thing I'll say in my little notes about the best, what each one is the best at, I think that the character dynamics in Last Crusade are my favorite. I do think that bringing in Sean Connery, like Last Crusade, it does feel a little bit like a response to how people were a little bit off put by Temple of Doom and being like, this is too dark. So they like kind of went back to basics with Last Crusade. Like they bring the Nazis back, but then it's like, let's go back to basics, but also let's bring in Sean Connery as like our ringer. And I think that like dynamic between him and Harrison Ford is so much fun. Like I don't remember like anything about the plot of this movie. Like every time I watch it, I'm like, what? Like, I don't like phase any of that, but I just remember how much fun it is like watching them go at it with each other. And like as Gemma was saying earlier, like the action sequences in some of these movies are so fantastic, but they do have a lot of really great scenes that are just two people talking. And like when Harrison and Sean Connery are on that blimp together and they're just like going back and forth, like that's like one of the most thrilling moments of any Indiana Jones movie. And I will say that too, the Holy Grail stuff at the end is like so freaking rad. Like that, a thing that I want more of in the Indiana Jones movies that I think other people get that I don't get as much with like Raiders or Temple of Doom is like this sense of like wonderment and like adventure and thrill. Like I don't get that a lot with them, but seeing that Holy Grail stuff go down, like when he finds that knight who's been there for hundreds of years just guarding this, and like you see like all of that go down, I'm like, this is movie magic to me. Like this, I feel like chills like watching this go down and like placing myself there. So I love that scene.
Do you think, okay, I understand why they ended it the way they did because Hollywood movies, but do you think that Sean Connery, that Henry Jones Sr. should have stayed in there and taken over from other old knight to guard the carpenter's humble cup?
There we go. Let's remake this and just change the ending. That's perfect. That the
listening.
Reason Last Crusade is not the best Indiana Jones movie is because they didn't do that. If they had, it would be better than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, but unfortunately they didn't do it, so Crystal Skull still wins, but it's close.
I feel like, what is the reason? What is the reason to give his dad eternal life?
Yeah, they wanted that John Ford Horizon shot. And then you also, if they do that, you don't get the iconic line where Sean Connery says,
"We're named the dog, Indiana."
There we go.
This is true. And that calls back to my behind the scenes knowledge, because guess what? In Temple of Doom, Indy, Willie, and Short Round are all named after dogs that belong to George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and the writers and other crew members. And so I have a question for you. If we, the Letterboxd Show crew, were making our own action adventure blockbuster, and our characters were named after our pets, what would our characters be called?
Brad is the star.
Okay.
He's leading.
Brad is the star. Yeah. Okay.
My cat is Angel.
Oh.
He was a delight.
Wow. My God. Okay.
Brad.
Angel.
Angel. Nova.
Nova. And are you going to throw all your dogs in there, Slim, or just the one?
I mean, it's going to be a big cast. We'll have
Don't
Blue.
Don't pick faves. Don't pick faves. Don't pick
we'll
faves.
Have Chloe. So the cast is growing.
Oh, this is amazing. And then I guess our one family dog, Satchmo.
Satchmo. That's a great name.
That is a sidekick name.
Yeah.
That's a short sidekick name.
Yeah, Letterboxd Productions.
Yeah, contact us if you want to help finance this incredible blockbuster. It's going to be amazing. Hey, I just want to say that the tank scene and the way that the camera frames, you know, just filming through the windows of the tank as the tank is turning and everything's gone down, it's just one of my favorite all-time Spielberg moves. Oh, just can't get enough of it. The frame within the frame. I just cannot get enough of that. He's a genius.
When Indy is getting drug across the rocks, that looks extremely dangerous. I know it's probably, there's a million safety experts on set, but it just feels dangerous to me.
I was reading about how to do that scene. Like he was really doing it, but crew members were just like dumping dirt on him.
Oh, yeah.
I want to be the crew member. Dysentery dirt. I want to be the crew member dumping dysentery dirt.
Well, the crew members were the rats. It was the RGA members. They were dumping the dirt on them.
Scooping it out.
Wait, I have one more thing I have to say. One more thing. Indiana Jones does a fake Scottish accent, and it's funny to me. There. Okay. That's all. That was always my favorite part when we would watch this, like, as a family. Like, that was my favorite part, was Indy doing accent comedy. It's very random, and it is very makes me random. Giggle. It's like, what? He's doing, like, improv?
His last-minute plans are always super sketch, I feel like. And he says he'll figure it out.
I love when he does improv. It's really goofy. So I would watch the Indiana Jones long-form improv special. Okay, now I feel ready to move
well,
on.
Well, I would like to say one more thing, because I think it does lead us nicely into Crystal Skull. Because there are so many men in these movies, we do need to talk about the women in each of these films. And Elsa, I mean, Elsa is such a great Indiana Jones love interest foil in this one.
Yes,
she slept with both of them. With both of right? them. But also, like, she's a Nazi who kind of maybe comes good, but then kind of goes bad. And the ending is just it really hinges on. It's some of the best comedy. It's also the worst earworm, because her name's Elsa, and then someone yells, "Let it go." And then kids started singing, and it was just terrible. But at the time, that wouldn't have happened. Anyway.
Wait, the Let It Go scene, I do, not in Frozen, I mean in Indiana Jones, is, that's another favorite. Like, I think it's a perfect mix of comedy and drama, because, like, she falls, she's trying to reach it, she's like, "I can almost get it," and Indy's like, "Let it go, let it go," and then she falls to her death. And then Indy falls, and his dad grabs him, and Indy's like, "I can almost reach it, I can almost get it." And it's the same thing. And it's both funny, but also, like, a little bit devastating and sad. It's just I think it's a beautiful and interesting scene. Thank you very much.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Released in 2008. 19 years after The Last Crusade, they waited until they got it right. Directed by Duels Steven Spielberg. 4.9 average on Letterboxd, I'm seeing. Don't fact check that. The synopsis for this one: set during the Cold War, the Soviets, led by sword-wielding Kate Blanchett, are in search of a crystal skull, which has supernatural powers related to a mystical lost city of gold. Other hijinks ensue. This is this is not a joke. People sometimes think I'm being ironic on the internet when I say that I like certain movies. Lyle Lyle Crocodile, 4 out of 5 on Letterboxd for me. I am not joking when I say Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is my favorite movie in this franchise. I think that the action in it is extremely exciting and dynamic. I think they bring us so many different flavors and locations, from bullwhipping through the warehouse to the whole nuclear testing site set piece, which I think is objectively the greatest set piece in this franchise. The nuking the fridge, it got a bad rap. People are coming back around on it, deservedly so. It rules. I would watch a whole movie of him, like, in that environment. It's such a great shift of Indy into, like, a new era, seeing that nuke going off with him, like, silhouetted. Like, gorgeous. That's fantastic. What's wrong with it?
Why is Christopher Nolan even bothering with Oppenheimer
exactly.
when you've
what
got
are you doing?
That?
What are you doing? We got Kate Blanchett quotes Oppenheimer in this movie in a weird Ukrainian accent. What are we, like, why is the Oppenheimer coming out? We already did it perfectly. We got a motorcycle chase through the university. This movie gives us action sequences through the university. We get city locations. We're
Ooh,
walking
I,
around.
Can I say, through
Jump
the actual
in.
University.
Jump in about how good it is.
This is, I agree that the first half hour of Crystal Skull is some of the best Indiana Jones content ever made. But also, my sister was living in New Haven at the time. And so this is like stuff of family myth and legend, is that she'd be out for a stroll and there would be Harrison Ford just, like, setting up for a scene, because they did it. They actually filmed it on campus at Yale. It was so exciting. It was like the first time I felt like I could touch Hollywood in a way, kind of. Yeah.
Touch
Harrison Ford.
I mean, with the behind the scenes kind of stuff, like, on this one thing that I love about this is that Harrison Ford convinced the writer David Kep to write in like more jokes about Indy's age in the script, because obviously we're coming into this, you know, he's Harrison Ford. He's a little bit older in this one. No big deal. He can still do it. They wanted to CG his bullwhip for certain scenes. He said, absolutely not. I am using that bullwhip. Like, you are going to see me. And he refused to dye his hair for the role, which they wanted him to do. And like I read this quote where he said, my ambition in action is to have the audience look straight in my face and not the back of a stuntman's head. I hope to continue that no matter how old I get. And Dial of Destiny, maybe he's changed his tune a little bit.
We'll get into it.
But I think this movie is so fun. I think when I think about like this movie, there are so many scenes that come into my head as like iconic moments for me. There's a whole run when they're in the jungle where they are swarmed by these enormous killer ants. Cate Blanchett crushes one between her knees, which is, you know, I mean, that's catnip for the lesbians out there.
It's the best Indiana Jones
movie.
Okay, fine.
Exactly.
Okay, now, fine.
My last note before I'll hand it off to other people who will surely agree with me. This movie has a whole sequence in quicksand. How many movies actually have people sinking into quicksand, with a fun bit where Indy then explains that it's actually a dry sand pit, which is very, very different from quicksand. I'm learning stuff. I'm learning things watching this movie. I don't know, Slim, I saw you rated it 4 stars recently on a rewatch. What's going on with Kingdom of the Crystal Skull? Why is this the best Indiana Jones movie?
I think this is the first one I saw in theaters. I don't know if they were really re-releasing the other ones before this had come out. So I saw this opening weekend. I remember just kind of being bummed at first. But so last year or 2 years ago was the first time I rewatched it. I was like, you know what? This isn't that bad, because it's a 2.6. Sorry, Mitchell, cover yours.
4.9.
It's like a 2.6. or on Letterboxd, which I think is kind of harsh. And yes, there's bad stuff in it. The CGI scenes, I think someone should be incarcerated for the CGI decisions made in this movie. Specifically, the end is just horrendous. I mean, we have ILM. ILM exists. We've got miniatures somewhere in a crate.
The rats were on strike. The rat union was on strike when that was happening.
RGA!
Oh my God, the freaking RGA. Another scene I think is also like kind of bad is the only photos Indiana has of Marcus and his dad are stills from The Last Crusade. Who was in charge of that decision? You couldn't have done anything better than that? Oh my God. However, Indiana Jones and Aliens is a big yes for me.
Fantastic. Like, that's
perfect, perfect fodder for Indiana Jones' storyline. I love how it's looped into the ancient civilization. Like, this is how they learned how to do certain things. I love the design of the crystal skull. It's so cool. And I love the ending. I mean, outside of the CGI, which I think should have been illegal, but the ending is great. So I put aside the bad stuff because I just love the fun that I have in the rewatches. So I actually get on rewatch the same kind of excitement that I get from the other three.
Thank you.
Previously from this. So this has aged very well for me personally. Mia?
I feel like when I first watched it, I didn't care for the aliens and it took me out of it. But now I smoke weed, so I like the aliens.
people really complain about the aliens and like it not fitting. Like the last movie had the literal Holy Grail. Like, what are you people talking about?
And a thousand-year-old dude.
I agree with you. But that now is, that I succeed.
That is an earthbound piece of history. And I agree.
These aliens were on the earth too.
Oh,
they were
there. Hey, I've got news for you all. We're aliens.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Boom. Mic drop.
Too deep.
We live in outer space, honestly. Similarly, love the first half hour. The first half hour is a 5-star film. When it got to the aliens, I was like, nope, you lost me. I hate this film. Never want to watch it again. And then Tar came out.
And Oh God.
And if anyone it has been 0 weeks since
we reset the clock again. We made it about 40 minutes. Reset it again.
And if anyone wants to know where Lydia Tarr got that Ikaro from during her 5 years with the Shibibo Kanibo people of Peru, you just got to watch Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. It's all right there. She's on the same side of the spirit that created it. It's like, and then you watch this and Tarr, perfect double feature. That's all
Gemma
I
went
say.
Viral with that review. She's 161 likes on that
what?
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull review, by the way.
Oh my God, I think that's my most liked review on Letterboxd
ever.
This is wild.
This is the most I've appreciated the existence of Tar, if it brings more appreciation to Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
And funnily enough, on this watch, I remember when I saw this in theaters, I was like, oh man, Harrison Ford's kind of old. I don't think he looks that old
in
this one. Yeah, I think he does. Yeah, you're right.
There's no Irishman moments here where, you know, you can feel like this is an old man. They're trying to make do young guy stuff. Like, he's great. He fits perfectly. They're not trying to push him too far past the limits. Like, he vibes well. Him and I know, you know, I'm a little bit bitter because I auditioned to play Mutt and they did not cast me. But I think him and Shia do have a good rapport in it. I like the... Speaking of Spielberg and the father-son stuff, I think the parallels between Harrison or Indiana and Mutt with Indiana and his father work really well, like especially watching it like right after watching Last Crusade. I think seeing kind of that development in his relationship with fatherhood is actually really compelling. I think it plays well. And also Mutt sword fights with a Russian on like opposite Jeeps going 60 miles an hour. That's awesome. That's rad as
that's
hell.
Cool. That is rad as hell. And then he does the monkey swinging and like loses points. But
we
that's
don't,
why.
We, you know. Everybody, you know, you get up, you get a glass of water, you have a little dysentery during the monkey swinging, and then you just come right back to it.
Also, they do circle back to Last Crusade because remember when he does that motorcycle stunt, Mutt is like pleased with himself and he laughs and he looks back at Harrison and Harrison is like annoyed and not impressed.
He calls him Junior.
Oh yeah. Hey, you know, I really appreciate hearing the detail about how Harrison didn't want to dye his hair and wanted to show aging on screen, because here's what happened. Watched it with the 7-year-old and he goes, "Why is his hair white? I don't understand. Why is his hair that color?" And so we had a really beautiful talk about aging and about how, you know, as an actor, you should be able to continue playing a role and not be written out of it and replaced by somebody else. And yeah, it was cool. It was really nice.
This is the beauty that Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is bringing us. We're bringing families closer together, honestly.
Can I also admit that Crystal Skull has the most romantic line in all of cinema history when Indiana Jones says to Marion, "They weren't you, honey."
Everything's great. And the ending, speaking of the ending with Slim, there's a line where Indiana's talking about the aliens, and he says that knowledge was their treasure. The treasure all along was knowledge. That line makes me cry, people.
Oh my gosh.
I'm in tears hearing that line.
Okay, so we got to dive into one of the things I love the most about Indiana Jones, and that it took me, and I know lots of people have written about this, but it took me watching all four of them back to back to understand, is this is a guy who is a treasure hunter who never gets the treasure. Mm. It's always slipping from his hands. And I just think that is the most genius conceit for a character, you know, in all of time and history, is that he's got to go out and get this thing, either to save it from falling into the wrong hands or because the university wants it or the government needs it or whatever. And when he gets it, it either falls into the, you know, the pit of despair, or it gets locked up by the American government in a giant warehouse, or it takes Cate Blanchett off into another dimension. And I just think that's so cool. Like, he's actually really like a bad archaeologist. He's really, really bad.
He's stumbling through it.
It's just like us.
Doing long-form improv.
The other thing about Crystal Skull is I didn't love how all of the locals, the indigenous of this particular community next to this, who are protecting this particular treasure, all got, you know, arrows in the back, shot, killed by, you know, the Ukrainian Russians. I didn't love it. I did love that they weren't portrayed as bad people, that their job was, hey, we live here and we're protecting this
thing. They're protecting it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's sort of incrementally inching towards being a little bit less culturally, you know, racist and just problematic all round.
Says the Temple of Doom defender.
Hey, I said it was racist. They knew it was racist. Also, I learned in the behind the scenes that India wouldn't let them shoot in India because India read the script and were like, nah, this is racist. So they went and shot in Sri Lanka, who were like, yeah, we need the money. Thanks. That's cool. So like... They were told. It's not like they weren't told.
This is it. The last one ever. They're not going to make another one after this.
How do you know?
This is it.
But how do you know?
They told
all
us.
The advertising keeps saying Harrison Ford's last. The commercials say Harrison Ford's last time as Indiana Jones.
He's coming out we'll in front see. Of can. He's we'll coming see. Out in front of can, and he's weeping after they show the movie. He's weeping in front of the French.
There's a letterbox list by Russman. Longest gaps between sequels.
Oh,
it was 19
cool.
years between Last Crusade and Crystal Skull. How many years between that and this anyway?
Like 15. Yeah, they came close. 15 between Crystal Skull and this one. So,
we'll see. We just have to say out loud again, this is going to be spoiler free. Gemma is going to be on her best behavior. Historically, Letterboxd crew are horrendous with spoilers in our Slack.
Yeah,
so
but this film
will,
has just
everyone,
come out.
We are treading very carefully for
every
you,
indie
dear
fan
listener.
Deserves the right to see this and is spoiler-free.
Yes.
An opportunity as possible. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. I would say, though, that there has been mention of de-aging in the media.
Yes, that's not a spoiler.
So that's not a spoiler.
I don't watch trailers, so this is all news
media.
To me. But
Mitchell also doesn't read anything on the internet about potential special effects.
I'm not on the internet. You can't find me.
Okay. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny 2023. Not directed by Mr. Kate Capshaw. This is directed by James Mangold. Currently, at the time of recording, has a 3.2 average, which you'll note is like 10, 11 points higher than Crystal Skull. So, you know, going well. Indy is a slob living alone in a one-room New York apartment. His hippie neighbors play the music too damn loud, and he's slumming it as a professor at Hunter College when Fleabag shows up. She's in search of an ancient mathematical device, and she's not the only one. Mads Mikkelsen is also after this Dial of Destiny, rumored to have belonged to Archimedes. Here we go, Mitchell. Greek mathematician, physicist, engineer, astronomer, and inventor.
Oh, is this my favorite Indiana Jones movie now? Is it my time?
Maybe. Okay, so hands up. Who's seen it so far?
I have seen it.
Oh, it's you,
Mia, have you seen it yet?
No, but I sure would like to. I'm not getting invited to fancy screenings like y'all are.
I got two plus ones. I got a plus two to my screening. So I was able to bring my wife and son last night to go see it, believe
it
or
not. So
you
didn't bring Mitchell, and you live like an hour's drive from each other. That's like,
I knew Mitchell wouldn't want to have an opportunity to top Crystal Skull.
That's true. So I'm not going to watch it.
Out of preemptive spite. I knew they wouldn't even want to go to the screening. So yeah, I mean, right off the bat, I think the French hated it. We saw the response in Cannes. They did not like it.
What,
David
was it
Ehrlich.
Only like a 17-minute standing ovation. Instead
I mean, that's nothing. You might as well
ovation.
Not even screen the movie. David Ehrlich, who was on this show, I think David gave it 2 stars. And I'm usually pretty aligned with David.
David, a noted Kingdom and the Crystal Skull defender, 4 stars.
So that, I think, probably maybe gives Mitchell some pause. However, I gave it 4 stars. I like this movie a lot. I like the ending. I like the final act. I referenced it in my review, but this feels like the most Indiana Jones storyline ever. It almost feels like one that you would read about in the novels, because the novels have some pretty interesting pitches. Like, if you read the synopsis for some of the Indiana Jones books, they're pretty cool. And you almost like wish they would be turned into movies. So that's like my main thought in seeing this movie. And we can get into the CGI stuff and whatever. But Gemma, what was your overall take?
Oh, look, I agree with Parker Morgan on Letterboxd, who gives it 4 stars, as did I, and writes the proper ending to the Indiana Jones franchise. A really, and I mean really good. The puzzle solving in this film is among the best in the franchise. As for the cast, I was hesitant. But all of the new characters are awesome, especially Mads Mikkelsen, with his performance that captivates the audience during all of his screen time. And I just find that, it's the Mads Mikkelsen character. Like, the Nazis are back. Can we just say, no spoilers, but the Nazis are back. Mads Mikkelsen is a Nazi.
Like, it feels like a spoiler.
Wants to get his hands on the Dial of Destiny. Not going to tell you why. The reason is completely bonkers. Ella Kemp's spoilery review has a Darth Vader on it is one of my favorite takes. So if you've seen it, go and check out Ella's review on Letterboxd. It just had me cackling, absolutely cackling. I don't know, what do I want to say about this? The de-aging has been interesting. I've been reading a few reviews and people aren't happy with the de-aging.
Really?
I saw this at IMAX. I saw Dial of Destiny at IMAX, and at scale, the de-aging didn't bother me. Like, even there's a moment where he's getting out of a river and has to walk up a hill as young Indy. And it, do you remember in The Irishman when De Niro's got that young
remember.
Face? But that old body? But yeah, it didn't track like that in this. I was fine with it. I like, give me young Indy, give me old Harrison Ford, give me all of the things in a movie. They gave it to me. I got them. I loved it. The ending brought me to tears. Yeah.
Mitchell, are you pro or anti de-aging?
I couldn't be more anti de-aging. I do not like it. I will never like it. I'm looking through some of the reviews of Dial of Destiny though, and I like this review by Letterboxd member Yeesh, who says that the film is another fine addition to the currently exploding genre, 75-year-old who can beat up any man and F any woman. I'm kind of interested in it now.
I will say too, I mean, this isn't, they announced this, you know, months and months ago, but Mangold had said like the first 20-ish minutes take place in the past. So it's like de-aged Harrison is, you're getting that to start the movie. Yeah. I think it's the best de-aging I've ever seen right off the bat. Like the Mandalorian stuff, throw that in the dumpster. That de-aging that happened in that show is not even in contention. I do think that's most of their CGI budget went to the de-aging. But it looks great. I thought it was, it didn't take me out of it at all. I asked my wife, I think she thought it was a little Uncanny Valley-ish. So I think it's really going to depend on that person.
I loved it. I reckon though, and I wrote a little bit about this in my review. Okay. I reckon there's one chase too many. There's just, they could have cut it down. Like this.
It's a 3-hour movie.
Symptomatic of this trend towards just too long movies. Yeah. It should have been the same length as, you know, on average as every other Indiana Jones movie. I understand that it's the last one, but I don't feel like the length added anything to what we needed to conclude Indy's story as a human mortal man. My biggest problem with this film is how fast all of the vehicle scenes are. Like really, like somebody quipped on Letterboxd, Indiana Jones and the Polar Express, because there's a whole bunch of stuff that takes place on a train. And it was just, it's just too fast. And when you think back to the really great vehicular scenes that happen in other indie movies, so that slow turning plane, the slow moving tanks, the slow planes to take off, there's something so cool about how, like, the plotting and the perspectives and how much character you can have during action, that I think Mangold a little.
Mangled.
Oh, look out. Look out.
Shots fired.
Shots fired. But as a Jewish man, he nailed it on the Nazi front.
Mia, are you pro de-aging or anti-de-aging?
Mia, how many rats have you de-aged in your apartment?
De-aging rats. Oh my God. I'm pro de-aging literally only when it's turning Harrison Ford into 80s Harrison Ford. That is a technological advancement that I have been pushing for, that I've been begging the government to funnel money into. So I'm glad that they have listened to my many letters. That is, I believe, the only time I am pro de-aging. Otherwise, it's as we said, Uncanny Valley.
I would say that I would do Harrison Ford at any age.
That's what I've been watching some of these interviews that he's been doing. That man is fine.
Oh, yeah. Man. That man is fine.
So I guess really the result of our debate is an agreement that we all love Harrison Ford and would have relations with him at any point. I think that's what
respectfully,
that's the consensus, I feel.
We agree on that, and that Temple of Doom is the horniest Indiana Jones.
Thanks so much for listening to The Letterboxd Show. Our guests today were Mia and Mitchell. And you can obviously follow them, Gemma, and myself on Letterboxd using the links
in the episode notes. And maybe consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, as it helps new friends discover the show. And you can always drop us a line at podcast@letterboxd.com. We love mail.
Ah, we love mail. Thank you to our crew, our editorial producer, Brian Formo, our booker, Sophie Shin, Sam for the art, John Williams for the theme music today. Thank you to Lucasfilm for that, to Slim for doing the fun audio and editing stuff, and once again, to you for listening, and importantly, to the one and only Harrison Ford for your service to cinema lovers everywhere. The Letterboxd Show is a tape deck production, Temple of Doom forever.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.